favorite fruit is chocolate covered cherry and seedless watermelon. Oh, nothing from the ground is good enough. Body rise, look what's over me. Oh, chariot, your golden waves are walking down upon this face. Oh, chariot, I'm singing out loud to guide me. Give me your...
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and happy Thursday to everyone tuning in to another episode of Will, Sam, and Sam in the morning.
Yay!
Will's excited to be here.
Oh, it's a great morning.
It's
Yay!
A great happy Thursday morning. Sam's always excited to be here. He just, you know, he's hoping his mom's listening, and I love you, Mrs. Farron. Sorry, what? That just slipped out. Oh. Sorry, I just, you know, I love Sam's mom. You know how I feel, Will.
Oh, I know very much how you feel.
He gets me. All right. So as always, it's me, Sam Anthony. Alongside me is Samuel Elizabeth Ferentz.
Hello.
And William Robert Camilleri. We're going to give you the inside scoop on Pittsburgh, Philly, RMU sports. So please enjoy the ride. Hang out. Have a good time. Talk some sports with us. So, you know, it's Thursday, which means that we're 2 days from the divisional playoffs. So I figured the first stop we could have is, guys, what to you is the most intriguing matchup, and what to you is the matchup that nobody should be watching?
I think they're both AFC games, honestly. I think Pittsburgh Jags. Yeah, that's who they're playing.
Yep.
I looked at the AFC. I think that could be a very interesting game, just because I honestly don't know what's going to happen. Like, I know the Jags aren't that great, but they seem to have the Steelers' number the last time they played. So I think it could be a very interesting game. And I don't think anybody should watch the Patriots-Titans game. Maybe watch it for, like, the first quarter. And then when the Titans start getting blown out, switch to whatever else you want to watch on whatever day it's being played. Because, I mean, you're going to see the Patriots win for a little while now, but
makes some sense. Sam, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'd like to say everyone should watch the Titans game because I really hope that it's going to be a good game. But
so does everyone not in New England.
I mean, I don't watch that game. That's it's when it comes down to it, that's going to be, I mean, I know everyone wants it to be a good game. Maybe even the Patriots fans want it to be a good game so they don't have to snooze through it. But I don't see it being very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, you look at how the Steelers played the Titans, how the Titans have played, you know, good teams, how they've played average teams. Like, it's not in the cards. I agree that I think it's a consensus that that's, you know, the worst matchup. But if you ask me, all right, what's the most intriguing matchup to me? It's Philadelphia and Atlanta, mm-hmm. and in the sense of, one, Philadelphia is the first number one seed ever that's not favored in this matchup against the sixth seed. That's never happened before. So in terms of, you know, again, it's going to be a close matchup because you have a really talented sixth seed in the Falcons. But at the same time, you don't know what to expect from the Philadelphia Eagles in terms of their offensive production. You know, again, there's two different Nick Foles. And there's, you know, the Nick Foles from, you know, 2013, and they were really phenomenal. And then there's the, you know, the later Nick Foles that kind of is where we are now. But, again, he's shown flashes of both in the regular season. You saw the great Nick Foles against the New York Giants. You know it's possible. Personally, I think it's going to fall somewhere in the middle. I don't think we're going to see the worst Nick Foles. I don't think we're going to see the best Nick Foles. But the question is, with the mix of having guys like Ajayi, like Blunt, like having a defense that's been as phenomenal. I mean, they hold their teams to the second worst quarterback rating in football.
And they're still the number one rushing defense in the league.
Exactly. So to me, if you're keeping Atlanta, you know, it's similar to that Oakland game, where if you're limiting the production of Matt Ryan, of his wide receivers, I mean, if they can shut down Julio Jones and get to Matt Ryan, they may be able to force enough turnovers that Nick Foles can create some offense and they get the win. So to me, it's intriguing because I think that's one of those few matchups where you don't know quite what you're getting, because you also are seeing an Atlanta Falcons team that, you know, they've shown flashes of brilliance. They've shown flashes of, you know, being absolutely terrible. I mean, we saw Julio Jones drop what would have been a game-winning touchdown wide open earlier in the season. What are we going to see from this game? And that's the thing, is you don't know.
I really have no feeling towards it, because the inconsistency of the Eagles has been, honestly, from the time Donovan McNabb retired to when they drafted Wentz before last season. Honestly, even last season, because he didn't have options and kind of was the Eagles of old. But so this going into this game, I feel like it's just another game from any number of years. But it's the Falcons, and I think the Falcons are a very beatable team. So, and I agree with you. I think our defense is going to play a major major role in this game, simply because they are kind of the rock now. And it was interesting. You could see the shift in the defense from the Rams game even all the way to I don't count the Dallas game because it was backups, but to the Raiders game. And what I feel like is they were comfortable when Wentz was at quarterback. So they could, like, their mentality was, I'm going to do this because I know even if I mess up, we have a quarterback that can go and make up for it. And now that he's out, I feel like they're kind of in this mindset where I have to do everything perfectly because our quarterback might not be able to make up for my mistakes. And it's funny because that's when they tend to make the most mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're loose and they are kind of gunslinging almost, rather than being this tight, concerned, like conservative defense, they're a lot better. So I think they need to, I don't know what needs to happen for them to have faith in Nick Foles or just be comfortable out there. But they need to figure it out, because they did one of the big things, I think, is double moves for the secondary. Because if you look, anytime there's a double move, you can guarantee at least one of them is getting beat. Not Malcolm Jenkins, because he's Malcolm Jenkins, but I've seen Jalen Mills get beat. I've seen, I can't remember half the guys because there are so many of them, but and it's so predictable. You can see it coming because it's your number one receiver going inside. And when does that ever happen?
Mm-hmm.
But so I think that's the biggest key, is not getting beat, especially with Julio Jones.
To me, that entire Falcons offense revolves around how Julio Jones is doing. Not Matt Ryan, but Julio Jones. Because when he's catching the ball, when he's getting open, when he's making plays, it makes other receivers open. It makes Matt Ryan's job easier. I really think that you're right. If you can close out Julio Jones, or you can, you know, kind of limit him in terms of, you know, none of those long ball deep threat plays, you know, you should be trying to force Julio Jones to come in on a slant, on an in route, on an out route. You know, nothing slants, nothing fades, nothing deep. Mm-hmm. You know, keep him inside, limit his damage, because then you're slowing down movement. There's more chances for turnovers, pass rush. Because I promise you that pass rush will wear down the O-line before the O-line wears down the pass rush. Mm-hmm. So that's where I stand on the Philadelphia Eagles-Atlanta game. Yeah.
Defense wins championships.
It does, and that's the thing you have to note is, I mean, Eli Manning and Joe Flacco have Super Bowl rings.
Mm-hmm.
And let's not pretend it's because Eli Manning and Joe Flacco are all-time great quarterbacks. Some people step it up in the playoffs, which they do. But, I mean, a lot of people still consider Joe Flacco the worst Super Bowl-winning quarterback of all time. Look at guys like Trent Dilfer. I mean, literally, Baltimore has not won a Super Bowl with a great quarterback. So, you know, a lot of people can count the Eagles out. And I'm even one of those people that's like, man, they really don't have a shot. But, again, if their defense plays like I've seen them play, like many people have seen them play, they can do it. I mean, they can force turnovers. They can create opportunities. And it would create a really interesting matchup if they were to go play Minnesota, because those are arguably the two best defenses in the NFC.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of going head to head. So, and then it would come down to, again, Nick Foles and Case Keenum, two guys that came into the year as backups in the NFC Championship game. That would be an intriguing matchup to me.
Now, I have a question for you. Staying with the NFL theme, Will, I hate to do this to you, but I want to talk about the Steelers for a second.
Oh, that's fine.
I mean, speculation, I think it's very legitimate. Ben Roethlisberger retires after this year, especially if he wins a Super Bowl.
If he wins a Super Bowl, he'll definitely retire. If they don't win a Super Bowl, I'd say he's got one more year.
Who are the Steelers going to go out and get?
Josh Allen in the first round from Wyoming. Quarterback. Mm.
So you think go young, not go and get like a Jimmy Garoppolo or a Kirk Cousins?
No. Yep.
No, I wouldn't bring Kirk Cousins.
They can't, unless Roethlisberger just immediately retires, they won't be able to bring in a Cousins. If he does retire, it's still paying a lot of money for Kirk Cousins, and I just don't think that's Pittsburgh's style.
It's also a big, in my opinion, you're taking a step down if you're going from Ben Roethlisberger to Kirk Cousins.
That's true, because you know what, like again, what made Roethlisberger great is similar to what's going to make Carson Wentz great. It's like, it's those intangibles. It's those situations where you need a big play, and they always seem to come up with like the big play. You know what I'm saying? Like we see Ben scramble and like chuck it up, and Antonio Brown's there for it. Kirk Cousins, I don't think, has those intangibles. And to me, I'd rather go and be confident that you're going to go get your quarterback of the future. Invest a first round pick in him. This is a good year for it because there's so many quarterbacks going into the draft.
Yeah, somebody's you know, there's slip some, through.
There's some people saying the five quarterbacks are going in the first round. And Josh Allen, to me, is a very similar Ben Roethlisberger type where he's not from a huge school. Very, very good quarterback. I say go for it, you know, and these kind of guys have been proven. I mean, look at, you know, Carson Wentz from North Dakota State. You know, smaller schools, not a lot of hype going into it, but good quarterbacks.
I mean, around there was a lot of hype.
But, yeah, but, you know. I mean, how many people are around North Dakota?
Fargo, yeah.
Yeah. So.
But then you have people like, I mean, Mitch Trubisky even. I mean, I heard comparisons of him to Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, it's all about that risk. But
Blake Bortles was compared to Ben Roethlisberger, too.
See where he is now.
Oh, man.
But, I mean, like, if you're the Steelers, I mean, let's say they don't win this year. I mean, that's a few years in a row they haven't been able to, you know, grasp the prize. Do they stray away from their normal ways? I mean, maybe it's time for a change.
No, because you just gotta wait for Tom Brady to retire. You want my honest opinion? Tom Brady retires. If this story about, you know, the inside conflict between Belichick, Brady, and Kraft is true, then you're going to see it fall apart. I really do. I mean, Brady's 40 years old, and statistically, it's proven, I don't care how good your diet is on the TB12 method, that after 40, you're like, you see NFL quarterbacks drop off.
Well, people in general, like, there's a reason why 40 is called over the hill.
I mean,
like,
your brain doesn't work as quickly, and you can see that with Tom Brady now. Is he so concerned with even getting hurt that as soon as he feels pressure, he goes down? You know, like, the reason you haven't seen Tom Brady take a hard hit this year is because as soon as he feels that pressure, like he's going to get hit, he goes down because he doesn't want to hurt himself. And to me, that's showing that we're towards the end here. And I think as much as Brady doesn't want to admit it, like, you're going to see a Peyton Manning-esque drop-off next year where you're going to see him hit week 5, and for some reason, he's not the same anymore. And to me, that's where the Steelers pounce right now. Is Roethlisberger's still got years on him. I think you give Roethlisberger one more year. If you say, hey, next year is going to be the year we beat New England, they don't have a chance because it's not going to be their defense. Their defense is still ranked 31st in the country. So to me, you've got
to sit and wait game and maybe draft for the future.
That's what I'm saying with Josh Allen. Josh Allen will be ready to go, you know, 2-3 years. Do an Aaron Rodgers sort of thing where, you know, couple years sitting there under Ben Roethlisberger with the promise that it's like, look, you sit tight, you hang out. This is yours, man. Mm. I really think that he can be that guy.
I think there are 8 great storylines that all the news outlets are going to pounce all over for this Super Bowl. Because you think about it, you have the Eagles and the Vikings who have backups to starters. Eagles worst to first. Vikings kind of out of nowhere. Drew, and then you have, you know, Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, and Drew Brees as kind of those grizzled, hardened veterans gunning for one more Super Bowl. you have Matt Ryan looking for redemption from last year, and then you have Blake Bortles, and Mariota is still the starter at in Tennessee, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you have two new guys, two young guys, trying to kind of prove themselves in this league. So I think it. I think everyone's going to go nuts over it, no matter who ends up being in the Super Bowl. I think they'll go nuts once the championship games start, because there's just so much. There's so many different. The teams are so different, and there are so many different ways to look at how everyone's coming about it. One thing for the Eagles, real quick, and then we can move on. Sam Anthony, you were talking about it earlier, how a lot of people have begun to start doubting the team and everything. And honestly, I think that's great, because the whole thing at the beginning of this year was kind of, will Carson Wentz be, like, it was kind of like the make or break year. Like, is he going to go through a sophomore slump and kind of become this average quarterback that people want to see, I guess? Or is he going to step up and become the future of the elite quarterback?
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of doubt and a lot of hate, especially. And then again, signing, bringing in Alshon Jeffrey, who has injuries in the past, and Torrey Smith, who a lot of people don't think is a very good receiver. And they've kind of fed off of it. Their whole thing this year was, it's kind of like us against the world, which I believe is a very Philadelphia stance as it is, but that's different.
True.
Like, their whole thing before every game, like, you know how the teams have a breakdown or whatever, is they say, we all we got, and then we all we need, which I think is awesome. And they, mm-hmm. like, they scream it, and I love it. And sorry. I got excited.
Do you need a minute?
I need a minute.
You all right?
But it's, and like, it kind of, that adversity kind of went away in the middle of the season just because they were rolling and just going and didn't really need it. But now I think that it's back. I think it could help, honestly, help them and push them to be the best version of themselves for these games.
You know what? I'm very excited for the playoffs. I think that we're going to see some really good matchups.
Hey, 2 days away. This is, I mean, I'll tell you what, these games might be bigger than, you know, coming up,
depending on who wins these games. Yeah,
these divisional games are, I mean, you have is it Tennessee and New England, and then Philadelphia and Atlanta,
yeah.
on Saturday,
yeah.
and then the other two on Sunday. I mean,
it's Saturday. I didn't know that.
Yeah, two Saturday, two Sunday. And I mean, think about it, if you're this, and I think for the, on the AFC side, it's really important. If the Steelers and the Patriots both go through, I think it's very important that they don't let that history cloud what they've accomplished. Because, you know, as soon as something happens in that game that goes the wrong way, everyone's going to explode. And I think it's important for them to keep their composure. I mean, that's starting to turn up into a heated rivalry.
Here's the question. Here's my question. Let's say that the Jaguars beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. All right. What chance do the Jacksonville Jaguars have at beating the New England Patriots? With that defense, a lot of people have said, hey, this is a defense that can really get to Tom Brady, give him a hard time, you know, kind of similar to what happened to Pittsburgh the first time they played Jacksonville. You know, the 5 interceptions by Roethlisberger, you know, Brady's not getting any younger. You know, they're going to come fast. They're going to force mistakes. Is it possible for Jacksonville to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl? Like, realistically?
So I know the Patriots' defense overall is really bad.
Their run defense is terrible, too.
Their run defense is terrible? Okay.
It's a guy like Leonard Fournette.
Exactly. I think that if that is the case, I think Leonard Fournette is the player of that game.
And Jalen Ramsey and the rest of that D-line, I mean.
Well, I've seen Jalen Ramsey. I haven't watched too much of the Jaguars secondary, but I've seen Jalen Ramsey play lockdown man coverage. So watch out. If they can pull that off. I mean, that's,
and if they can cover Gronk, that's the thing. Yeah. If they're the team that can, you know, shut down Rob Gronkowski, I mean, no doubt in my mind that they can beat New England. To me, they're New England's kryptonite. I think the Steelers are perfectly capable of beating New England based on what I saw in Week 15. But I think if there's a team that's more likely to beat New England, I think it's the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think just the style of play. The only thing I could see really hindering them is the play of Blake Bortles. Blake Bortles, if he plays a game, he throws 200 yards, no interceptions, just doesn't commit turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
They're this is a game that Jacksonville will win.
Now, if they go to the Super Bowl, who do you think is from the NFC and who wins then? Or from the NFC teams that are left, who would beat the Jags and who do you think would lose, continuing this storyline?
I think, well, one, you want to know the matchup I really want to see? Saints-Jags, because you're talking about one of the best all-around offenses in the league, because you got, you know, Drew Brees on the pass, and then you have the best running game in the NFL and the Saints going at the best defense. You know, who's going to win? Mm-hmm. To me, that's really intriguing. In terms of the best matchup for the Jacksonville Jaguars out of the teams left, it's got to be the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, Nick Foles will not put up points against the Jaguars. And to me, it'll come down to a turnover battle. Who's going to commit more turnovers? And I personally would be very excited if I was the Jaguars, and you don't have to really worry about points being put up. In terms of, I guess, the team that might be able to beat Jacksonville, probably Minnesota, in my honest opinion there, is because they have the defense for it, and they also have Case Keenum, an offense that's been operating at a good level, I think, in terms of a team that can really probably all around compete with the Jaguars. It's the Minnesota Vikings. Plus, they'd be at home.
My last thing on the Eagles, and then we can move on or whatever we want to do. I think if, and again, it all depends on Nick Foles. If Nick Foles is having a better game, I'd say the defense could let up 14, maybe. If he's not, they need to have 10 or 7, or else they're going to lose.
Yep.
And I think that was shown in the Raiders game. Not really shown as much in the Cowboys game.
Yeah, that, like you said, that one didn't really count.
And was there somebody in between the Rams and the Raiders? I think so. There was one more. Oh, the Giants game.
That was before.
That was before the Rams?
No, it was after.
It was after. Yeah. That was the week after.
You're right.
I mean, that game was completely different. I don't know what happened to the defense for that game, but if that happens, we're screwed. 100%. If they let up 30 points against any of these teams, we will lose. So, yeah, I'm kind of trying to stay as unemotional about it as possible. I know the deeper they go, the more invested I'll become, as the season has been, and at some point they'll probably rip my heart out, which is normally what happens.
I mean, I was talking with Sam before the show. This could be the last show that we talk about the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah. Oh, if they lose, we're talking about them next time.
I might cry on air.
I'm okay with that. I'm willing to take that risk.
We'll only rip into you just a little
bit. Okay. I'll take solace in knowing the savior of the Eagles is still out there.
Now, I want to talk about something we don't usually talk about on the show.
Ooh. All right, let's hear it.
And that's the NHL.
Oh, yeah. All right, I'm in.
First, I want to ask, how many games are in a season? 80?
82.
Yep, 82.
So we're about halfway through the season. I thought this was the point. Before I begin, let me ask you guys your thoughts on this. There are rumors floating around that the Toronto Maple Leafs are entertaining the idea of trading Austin Matthews.
Why?
Because it's the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Why? Do they want to lose? Do they not feel like investing in the future? This is only his second year. Where did you hear that rumor?
On ESPN.
Why? That's unbelievable. Sam Ferentz, do the Toronto Maple Leafs just hate themselves? I mean,
right hand up. I mean, it was the first thing that popped up when I went to the NHL screen.
You know what? I'm gonna bring up some Austin Matthews stats, because first off, wasn't that how old he is, Will?
He's like our age.
He's 20. I'm older than Austin Matthews.
I think Travis Konechny just turned 21 or is 21, and so is Ivan Provorov. Yeah. They're January and March 97.
Yeah, I mean, come on now. Last year he had 40 goals in his rookie year and 29 assists. He had 69 points. That is unreal. And this year he already has 33. He's on pace for the same thing. But you know what's amazing? This year his faceoff percentage is 10 times better. He is winning 55% of faceoffs. Why would you trade him? Why, Sam? What would you?
Because it's Toronto Maple Leafs.
If you think about it, if you trade him, you know you're going to get a lot for him.
I mean,
yeah, but it would be like the Eagles trading Carson Wentz.
I don't know. I don't know much about the NHL, so I
no, that's a ridiculous move. If they do it, then I wouldn't be surprised just because it is Toronto, but it would be one of the dumbest things of the year.
So, all right. So, ready? I pulled up this ESPN article.
Oh, you got the Austin Matthews one, though?
Yeah. So, ESPN's argument is that, yeah, moving Austin Matthews will put them over the top. And this is why. They said, moving Matthews would free up a lot of cap space required to keep him when his entry-level contract expires at the end of the 2018-2019 season. So basically saying, like, look, they could be good now, but they're going to be not as good with him because they're going to have to spend so much money to keep him. Two, it would help the team acquire a top-pair defenseman, whom they need far more urgently than a high-scoring forward, saying that, wow, their defense is so bad that they should risk giving up a high-scoring forward for a defenseman that can really help with that. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. If they have so many guys, I don't know if Austin Matthews would be the guy I'd get rid of, but in terms of being able to get someone who's top-notch, that's probably the best way you're going to be able to do it. And then it would go, it could be an Eric Lindros-like windfall of picks and prospects, including that top defenseman, if a bidding war were to erupt due to the gap between his perceived and actual value, saying that, so we can look at this small sample size of Austin Matthews and say, hey, he's a lot better than he actually is, and he's going to get better, which then means you can get a lot more for him without all of the risk of him potentially playing poorly. I see where all of those are coming from, but there is no indication, unless I'm seeing something, or the Maple Leafs are seeing something that I don't, that Austin Matthews is going to be a bad player.
Yeah, no.
And I understand that you need some defense.
Didn't he have a 5-goal game this season?
Yes.
I thought his first game, didn't his first game he scored 5, or was it 4?
It was someone else's first career game. Was
I think, no, it was his. That was 4. And then he had a 5-goal game this
year. Was that last year?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You want to know what else I find a little interesting is how bad both the Philadelphia Flyers and the Pittsburgh Penguins are playing right now.
I was just about to bring that up. Let me throw you some standings real quick, okay?
I don't want to hear about the Bruins, Sam.
I'm not hearing about the Bruins.
In the Eastern Conference, the top 6 teams that are slated to make the playoffs right now, Tampa Bay, Boston, Toronto.
Let's go, Boston.
Capitals, the Blue Jackets, and the New Jersey Devils. Now,
all right, can I go, or do you have a statement?
Give me 1 second.
All right, you looked at me.
All right, the 2 wild card teams, the Rangers and the Penguins. The Penguins are 1 point ahead of the Flyers, the Hurricanes, and the Islanders.
That's last place in the Met.
But
right
let's
now.
Be clear that the Met is like not
the Met.
Bad.
Okay, the Met is the most has the most parity.
Yeah, because you got to understand if any of those teams were in the Eastern, they'd be in fourth.
Yeah, in the Atlantic. Yeah, we'd be all four teams would be in a wild card position.
Because you got teams like Buffalo and Ottawa that are terrible.
Buffalo, Ottawa, Montreal, and Detroit, and Florida.
Is this a cause for concern?
No. So can I give you my opinion? And this is for both the Flyers and the Penguins. Mm-hmm. All right. So the Flyers, as of recently, have been very hot. They had a winning streak that really brought them back into playoff contention because they were really,
really
far.
They had a 10-game losing streak.
Yeah, and they've brought that back, and really, playoff hopes are alive and well. They're on a 3-game winning streak right now. Meanwhile, the Pittsburgh Penguins have won 2 in a row for the first time since early December, which is very important to note, especially because that last win was an overtime win over the Boston Bruins, one of the hottest teams in hockey. Mm. So this is what you have to look at. One, the Pittsburgh Penguins, in terms of talent, have the talent to be a winning team. They may have lost. They're not as good as they were last year. I'm not saying the Pittsburgh Penguins should be sitting at the top of the division, because they shouldn't. But when you have guys like Matt Murray that have really struggled, that have been hurt, you have guys in the back, you know, that have been injured on the defensive side, like the Penguins have had, you're going to see those struggles. And people can kind of link it to Flurry all they want, but have you seen Tristan Jarry's numbers? They've been good. Mm. He's the second best rookie goaltender in the league, only behind Malcolm Subban with the Golden Knights, mm. who has been playing out of his mind since he went there.
That entire team has.
Yeah. So you have to look at that. You also have to look at the Philadelphia Flyers, which, again, they're still a pretty young team, which means you're going to see those inconsistencies. But as of right now, they've seemed to kind of work out those inconsistencies. You look at the rest of that division, because all of these teams in their last 10, besides the New York Islanders at the bottom and the Washington Capitals at the top, have won 5 of their last 10. That is where their records stand. 5 of their last 10, which means they're all playing at the same level. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, again, Columbus is only 6 points ahead of Pittsburgh and 7 points ahead of those other three teams at the bottom.
The last. Yeah, that's insane.
There's a lot of room to jump.
There's an 11. It's an 11-point spread across the Met, which I believe is closest, because in the Atlantic, it's like it's 36 is the spread.
Exactly. And if you take a look at teams right now,
yeah,
the New Jersey Devils have lost 5 in a row. Mm-hmm. They've lost 5 in a row. They had won 5 in a row. Now they've lost 5 in a row. They are not hot right now. They are falling behind. I promise you that there's a chance. I'm not saying that, because there's a chance that, again, all these teams at the bottom, there's a chance that Pittsburgh, Philly, Carolina, and the Islanders all make the playoffs, because yeah. they can all slide into the mm-hmm. wild card and divisional spots, because there's so much parity in that division. At the same time, there's a chance that they all fall out. But mm-hmm. I do not believe at this point in the season there should be any concern, because no. there's so much parity. You're getting towards, you know, the back quarter of the season, and you haven't noticed any sort of, you know, upturn. In fact, you know, Jersey, Columbus, and Washington have actually expanded their lead in that division. Mm-hmm. That is when you get concerned.
Yeah.
But the fact that you've seen teams like Pittsburgh go and beat Columbus, go yeah. and beat Philadelphia, beat, you know, the Rangers, the Devils. I mean, you've got to have a lot of confidence.
The Flyers went and beat the Lightning, they're the winningest team in the league right now. And something interesting to note, though, and it always has been an issue, is the overtime losses for the Flyers and just the overall losses for the Penguins. The Penguins have the most losses in the Met right now.
And really, the only reason that they've been able to be at this point is because mm-hmm. they're so good at 3-on-3.
Mm-hmm.
That is, to me, one of their strengths, mm-hmm. which is huge, because when you get to, we're talking about postseason play here, playing for things, you're going to see a lot more overtime games. So that's where it could potentially hurt the Philadelphia Flyers. Mm-hmm. You're playing these better teams. You know, everyone's fighting for postseason contention. Philadelphia realistically needs to finish it off in regulation.
Yes.
Again, you know, you're talking about Pittsburgh versus Philly.
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh would rather send it to overtime, because they're going to win it 9 times out of 10, because mm-hmm. that's where their strength is. Where mm-hmm. meanwhile, Philadelphia, you're going to be trying to finish them off in regulation, and that's where it's going to come down to. Mm-hmm. That. And honestly, with those two teams, it could come down to them fighting for that final spot in the yeah. playoffs.
Which, honestly, like, I love that, because that's, like, getting back. I know it's not long ago for our older listeners out there, but, like, back in the late 2000s, when they were playing each other in the first round of the playoffs, and it went to 7, and there were like 8-7 games, and you know, those 5-3 games and everything, and you know, the coaches on the benches screaming at each other, like getting back to that rivalry that made me hate them, but I mean, has created some really great hockey. And just being a Flyers fan, having kind of more interest in them than everyone else, it's interesting that they have eight overtime losses, because they go to overtime quite often. Like, it's actually pretty frustrating how many times they either blow a lead and have to go to overtime.
Yeah.
So it's not that they can't win in overtime, because they have. It's this, I think, comes down to coaching. It's the lines. Because you have guys that play wonderfully together on 3-on-3 that, for whatever reason, Hextall won't put together. Or you'll have guys on your second overtime line that don't make sense. Like, I thought bringing in Flipula last year, I don't even know, was a great move. But he's not a power play guy, and he's not a second overtime guy. He's not fast. You need to be fast and be able to move the puck, and he's more of a grinder than quick, and you need to be quick. That's why Travis Konechny is so great. Jake Voracek, Wayne Simmonds, Claude Giroux, they all can move the puck, and they can all get it into the offensive zone. So that's one of the most frustrating things to me about the Flyers is just they have the ability. They just, for whatever reason, don't do it. And then for the Penguins, just real quick, because I have been thinking about it. One of their things I've noticed, because they always get hurt, and for whatever reason, that is the big, like, overtime losses is the plague of the Flyers, and injuries is the plague of the Penguins.
And that's been the problem is, you know, when you lose guys like Matt Murray and you don't have that depth at goaltender,
right,
that hurts.
And, you know, one of the things that the Penguins have been great at, and I think it's one of the reasons why they have won the past two Stanley Cups, is that they have a farm system where you can bring with NHL-ready guys or guys that come up and surprise everyone and being NHL-ready.
Mm-hmm.
So the biggest thing, and I think you're kind of starting to see it now, is when does that farm system dry up? Because you can only have so many great AHL and ECHL guys for so long until they're all either traded or playing in the bigs.
Hey, well, you know, all I'm saying is Cody Wido.
How much do you think that helps RMU Sports if he makes it?
You want my honest opinion?
Yeah.
Brady Ferguson's more likely to go play for the Penguins than Cody Wido.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because he went to their prospects camp. They really liked him. The rumors have been swirling that they will sign him and he will be the first Robert Morris player to play in the NHL. Post-Gazette put out an article about it. And if he plays like he's been playing, he was the highest scoring player in December.
Mm-hmm.
And if he goes out and he plays like this the rest of the season, he will get signed by the Pittsburgh Penguins and he will go and he will play for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Hmm. Like farm system or actual
Penguins? Like actual Penguins.
What do you think? I know Marat was at the Canucks camp before the season. What do you think about him? I know he still has a few years here, but...
I think so. I think that this year hasn't really been so much Marat playing poorly as more of...
The defense letting him down?
The defense letting him down, in my honest opinion.
I haven't been able to see a lot of their games. So
they had a big win Tuesday night against Niagara.
Yeah, I did see that. That was Niagara a big win. Had votes... Yeah. In the polls.
To me, it's a lot of momentum, especially after the Three Rivers Classic. They had that big win against Lake Superior State 5-0, and they battled. They battled with Providence will probably make the NCAA tournament.
Mm. The number 11 team in the country.
Yeah. Their coach was not happy with me. Providence is, when I asked a question about why Robert Morris was battling with them, he didn't seem to think that it was so much of a battle, so much of them making mistakes and keeping Robert Morris in it. But from the game I saw, it was Robert Morris doing a really great job of battling. I really don't think they were going to win that game. They weren't able to score enough. But I think to me, it was a confidence builder. It was classic. And it always does seem to be kind of like that launching pad, that jumping point where all of a sudden they find it again.
Mm-hmm.
So
something that I have seen that I think is different from last year is that Luke Lynch has kind of been in the shadows more. Like last year,
Luke Lynch is their leading scorer.
I feel like he's doing it quietly because I haven't heard much.
Yeah, I'd agree with you.
He's not having as like flashy and exciting goals, like the shorthanded breakaway goals that he'd had last year.
Yeah.
So he's doing it quietly. I didn't even know he was their leading scorer. I thought it was Brady Ferguson again.
Yeah.
But
in terms of goals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Luke Lynch, honestly, he's picking up right where Zach left off. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty impressive. I think that, he's been a really big help because their biggest problem last year was depth in their scoring. And still, I mean, that front line gets a lot of the scoring.
Yeah.
But you're seeing guys like Lynch, like Mantenuto, kind of getting into the action a little bit, which is good. Guys like Riley Risling, he scored the lone goal against Providence. Mm. He's a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
I was there for his first goal.
One of his first goal was here. I forget who it was against, but I was at that game. I remember because nobody had any idea
who it was.
I think even our own Ian Kist had no idea who he was.
He's a cool dude. I had him in social class last semester. So it's a fun thing with Robert Morris. You're in class with all the athletes.
Yeah. We so men's basketball is playing St. Francis tonight, ESPN3.
Good one to wrap on.
Ooh.
I'll be there.
What are your thoughts?
Honest opinion, I think that this is huge because you're talking about two of the top three teams in the NAC. The top three are going to be Robert Morris, St. Francis, and Wagner.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that in terms of who's this, I think Wagner right now is the best team in the NAC.
Really?
I think that a close second would be both Robert Morris and St. Francis. I really don't think that right now you can determine who's better. So what I want to see is who's going to win. Who's going to go for second in the NEC, you know? I think it'll be Robert Morris.
We're still in first, right? We're still in first, right?
Yes, Robert Morris is tied for first with Wagner. Both of them are undefeated.
Really? I thought Wagner lost.
I'm pretty sure. Oh, no, you're right.
I remember because you texted me in all caps one night about RMU being the only undefeated team in the NEC.
You're right. I'm mixing up women's and men's.
Yeah.
Because
the women's play St. Francis on Saturday.
Yeah, who did Wagner drop to? Wagner dropped a game to St. Francis Brooklyn.
Hmm.
Ew.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Because St. Francis Brooklyn, I mean, they're not bad. They're 2-2, and they could have easily beaten Robert Morris.
Was it at Wagner or at St. Francis?
It was at St. Francis. Mm. So it was a road game.
But still, it's not that far.
But let's look at this, all right?
I mean, it's an island. Yeah. They're going from Staten Island to Long Island.
They did beat Mount St. Mary's by 20. Mount St. Mary's almost beat Pitt. I know Pitt stinks.
I hate Mount St. Mary's. I will openly say that. Mount St. Mary's and Central Connecticut State. Central Connecticut State doesn't really do anything except for in football, apparently.
The one year.
This year. But I just despise them, and I don't like Mount St. Mary's because they're Mount St. Mary's, and I feel like...
Well, did you go to the game? No, you were at hockey with us. I
was at hockey for that. That was
apparently the fans at Mount St. Mary were very rude to
Morris. That fueled it.
I know you guys feel very strongly about that.
I just can't wait. I can't wait for Mount St. Mary's to come here and for us to smack them.
Because, I mean, it's... I know the band is annoying sometimes, but we never, I feel at least, we never go over the top.
Oh, no. I've gotten yelled at quite a few times for, quote unquote, going over the top. But,
yeah.
But, I mean, I did hear
feel very strongly about this band thing.
Yeah. I did hear a lot about that game. And even from people who weren't in the band that were there were saying that their fans were quite disrespectful. And just, it didn't, like, it's a different atmosphere when, you know, you're cheering on your team and then you're yelling at the opposing fans. Like, it's a different vibe. I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like Mount St. Mary's, though. So, I don't like anybody in the NEC, really. But I think we can all.
It's because Robin Morris is superior to everyone.
Exactly. And everything we do,
Robin Morris sports is just.
This is going to be a good year for Robert Morris Winter Sports. Pay attention. I'm just saying, you know what? You could see, honestly, you could see both men's and women's win the NEC.
Mm.
I think it's very possible. I think women's will definitely win the NEC. I think that they're above and beyond better than any team in that conference right now, maybe besides St. Francis.
Now, let me ask you this question. What are the chances that we see all four winter sports go to the NCAA tournament?
None, because I really don't think men's hockey has a chance of doing it.
No.
Don't the conference winners go, though? Oh, no.
Just you have to win the conference tournament. Mm-hmm. So, which they could easily make a run in the conference tournament.
Yeah, because they'll be I think they're a 5 seed right now. So, they could, if they push, they could be a 4 or 3.
So, if you win the conference tournament, you go to the tour.
Yes. Big dance. That's the only way from Atlantic hockey that you make it.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, and hey, it's hockey. Anything's happening.
Don't sleep on him.
Sam Anthony, last thought, because we can't comment on it. Football in the fall, what's your thought?
For Robert Morris?
And the
Well, I love all the moves.
That was the one thing that we didn't discuss on Tuesday.
All the coaching moves? I know. Well, they officially hired an offensive and a defensive coordinator, Gabe Lavara and Dave Plungis. I'm excited. I mean, they're bringing in a culture at Albany that was a very great football culture. I mean, people, you know, say that, you know, oh, he's just bringing his own guys. Yeah, he's bringing in his own guys because then, you know, this culture that you're bringing in with you, this idea, this way you operate, everyone knows how you operate. I think that's great that the head of the offense, the defense, and the team are all from the same place. I think that's great. I think that I liked everything I heard from Bernard Clark. I think that I have a lot of confidence in this. I know people wanted an offensive-minded coach, but look, go with your strength here. Go with your strength in defense. Make the defense good. Honest opinion, 6-5. 6-5, and they potentially compete
undefeated
for an NEC championship. All right.
11-0. Let's go, Bobby Moe.
Calm down. Year one here. Year three, you know what? I want to see year one first. Mm-hmm. I think that Robert Morris is going to be significantly better. I think fans will be surprised at what they see. And I think you got to be excited for Robert Morris football because, to me, you had a real, like, make or break point in the history of this program. You know, do you keep investing money in this football program, or do you go and you take some scholarship money and you move it somewhere else? And that's going to come down to the success, because football can bring in a lot of revenue. Football can bring in a lot of crowds if they're successful. You know, I really do want to say I wish Coach Ferrison, Coach DeMichael, Coach Brown, Coach Coleman the best. I mean, those guys were really, really top-notch coaches, really great guys. I mean, that defense was phenomenal, and those guys were phenomenal. They taught lessons. They taught men rather than players. And, you know, I really hope that they find somewhere else to go. They find what they're looking for, because they definitely deserve it. So that's
yeah, I think we can go and say for all three of us, having worked with them, that we have the utmost respect for what they've done and how they've helped this program. I think we're okay to say that on air.
I think so too.
I mean, it really is. I mean, great guys, great coaches. I mean, I don't want anyone to think that the failure of this program was any way, shape, or form due to them. It was just an unfortunate, you know,
situation.
Things had to change.
Collateral.
For it's the cost of the change of culture.
Mm-hmm. All right. And on that note, we're on to our second Gavin DeGraw song, which means we're really over.
Yeah.
So on that note, this is Sam Anthony signing off.
This is Sam Ferentz signing off. Go Colonials. Love you, Mom. Happy birthday to Mrs. Ferentz today.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Mrs. Ferentz, I'll give you a birthday present.
Oh, no. Stop.
And this is Will Camilleri signing off on that note.
Happy Mrs. Ferentz. Happy B-Day. All right. Tune in out. See you on Tuesday.